on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour, and hopefully on the end of the line I'm joined by Steve Tung. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Andy. Good evening, everyone.
And how's tricks your end, my friend?
Very good. A little warm.
slightly.
Walking football for Leighton Orient and four games yesterday was the warmest I've been for a very long time, but I have to say we didn't disgrace ourselves.
Well, how did you get on?
Three draws and beaten in the last minute by the league leaders. So everyone was quite pleased with a decent effort.
Not a bad try that. We're joined in the studio by Lee Boyce and by the legend that is Errol McKellar. Good evening, Errol.
Good evening, fan. Good evening, everyone.
And good evening, Lee.
Evening.
That's it. Oh, you're very husky tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Now then, first of all, Steve, you're one of the few that's watched all of the pre-season friendlies so far. So just your general overview of things.
Well, I would say somewhere between satisfactory and encouraging, I think. And the impression I'm getting from other supporters who've watched at least a couple of the games is that that's the general feeling. I mean, if we take them in order, without going into too much detail, Dundee away, of course, was right at the start of our preparation, and Dundee were a long way ahead of us, had already played a couple of games. They're a Scottish Premiership side. And people are saying, why did we go all that way for a friendly? Well, the point was, of course, we were away for a whole week, and that it was an important bonding exercise, really, for the players, which some of the players have already spoken about, how beneficial that was with new players coming in. And above all, of course, for a new manager and a new assistant manager, really getting some time to work with them and, of course, to see them off the pitch. So the match itself was disappointing in terms of a 3-0 defeat and a couple of bad defensive errors, which made it that bad. But the result was very much secondary on that occasion. We came home against West Ham with supporters allowed back in, which was great. Quite a strong West Ham side. Established Premier League players like Noble and Antonio and Ogbonna and Cresswell. And a goalless draw was a fair result. Reasonable amount of entertainment. If there was one slight worry, from our point of view, it was perhaps how few actual chances we made. And then Spurs Again, a strong side which started. Half a dozen internationals for Spurs who played the first 65 minutes or so before the youngsters came on. And the most encouraging thing, I think, although I've said the results are not that important at this stage, just getting the ball in the net and getting a goal, I think, was important. And the fact that it was Ruul Sotiriou and that he took it very well was equally important. A little bit psychologically, if we'd gone three games without a goal, however unimportant results are considered, I think people would have been worrying a bit about our attack. We might say more about that later. But overall, good work. The manager seems very satisfied. He's saying positive things. He likes the determination and the character of the players as much as what they've actually produced. We've seen some good youngsters introduced. And, of course, we've still got a number of players who we haven't seen at all yet who have to come back in. So, yeah, overall, 7 out of 10, or that's even 7.5 if we're allowing us halves.
All right. Well, you're talking about the Spurs match. Let's just hear what Kenny had to say to Dave Victor after that match.
Goodness, there were 7 internationals in Tottenham starting 11. I would imagine you were very satisfied with your side's performance.
Yes.
Satisfied with your side's performance?
Yeah, it's been a good week for us. We feel we're improving, and you know, first off, we're very pleased and appreciate that the side that Spurs brought down today is very, as you say, a very strong side. You know, it was good for our players, it was good for our supporters. As you know, as we heard it here, the atmosphere in the ground, that's great, and they certainly contributed. In terms of our own development, we're pleased with today. It's very good for us, and I thought we responded well and created some chances.
Your third pre-season game in charge, and your first goal, and it was scored by Ruul Sotiriou,
and it's an excellent goal as well. I'm pleased overall because, you know, Smith and Drinan, you know, Dan Akaruma, and as you say, Sotiriou, you know, they all got into good positions, and that was encouraging for us as we work away at pre-season.
It was a goalless draw against West Ham in midweek, just the one conceded today. Your defence looks very tight.
Yeah, but they're different games, aren't they? Pre-season, it can be deceptive. You know, we don't take too much out of it. We want to do well though, and it has been a good week. You know, I won't lie to it, but it's been a good week for us. You know, we've progressed on a number of fronts, but similarly, you know, when it counts, we have to build up towards that, and we still have, you know, the best part of 3 weeks to go.
Players must be exhausted after playing in those temperatures.
Yeah, but that's pre-season. You know, it's there to work. It's there to work hard, and generally, when the season does kick off as well, it is hot as well. So,
but these games have demonstrated the strength in terms of the youngsters here.
Yeah, we've given some opportunities to some young players, and so far in 2 or 3 weeks of pre-season, they've responded well. We'll see now if they can keep up to those standards. I'm sure they can, and give us the energy and enthusiasm that young players do.
You're still looking to strengthen this squad?
Yeah, we are, and we've some players to come back as well, and you know, one or two not here, probably 3 players we've signed not here, and so that will help us, and at the right time as well, strengthen the squad, as you say. It's something, you know, it's an ongoing process as we work up towards the transfer deadline in the first of September.
Kenny, looking at the bigger picture, recently there's been a lot of discussion about racism in football, and Leighton Orient have acted, banning one of their season ticket holders for life.
Yeah, you know, we want to make sure we as encouraging as possible, and you know, don't tolerate any racism of any form. That's, you know, that's our beliefs, and you know, we will stick to our beliefs 100%.
Thank you, Kenny. Good luck.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. That was Kenny speaking with our own Dave Victor at the end of the Spurs match, and Kenny does speak extremely well, doesn't he, Steve?
Yes, he does. If you notice, I think he's a little bit more short and sharp than, say, Ross and maybe even Joby. He's not going to waste any words, but I suspect one of the things you gain from experience as a manager, and Jose Mourinho was always, I think, the master of this, you basically decide what you want people to know, what you want the supporters to know, and maybe even a message you want to get over to the players, and you get that over. You make it short and sharp, and you make your point. And I mean, sometimes I think Mourinho in particular could be a little bit contrary about it and would just talk about what he wanted to say. But, you know, that's his privilege when he's in front of the microphone. But no, Kenny talks good sense. I don't think I've been on the programme since he was appointed, actually. But we do, I'm sure there's widespread appreciation of the appointment, and congratulations to the board on getting it through. So a lot of positivity around that. And no, I think he'll be a very good spokesman for the club, which we all like to see.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on this just before we heard the interview, but I'll bring in the lads here and say that Steve was just intimating there that if this match had finished goalless, as far as Orient are concerned, there would have been a little bit of intrepidation here about maybe we haven't got enough up front, Lee. But you have to put in perspective the opposition as well, of course, that we're playing against, which is obviously a lot higher than we would be playing in the league. But do you agree with Steve that 4.5 hours without a goal would have been worrying?
On paper, yeah. On paper, I think it's worrying. It looks worrying. But when you put into perspective the amount of new players that have come in, especially on the forwards, the strikers, I've said before, at the moment, we've not really got players apart from Kemp who's going to create chances, too many chances. So I think when you put it in perspective, no, it wouldn't be too worrying. I mean, you're playing good quality opposition, they're getting good run out, they're learning to play together. But like I say, at the end of the day, everyone wants to see goals, don't they? Everyone judges the games, even friendlies, on goals. I mean, I think Kenny said there, you don't really pay too much attention to a result of a friendly.
I mean, Steve said about the number of internationals. Tottenham had, to be fair to Orient, Errol, they had a few of their own.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, let's give credit where credit's due. You know, this is an excellent signing of a manager and his assistant. You know, Kenny Jackett, will do well if the players take on board what he and Joe Gallen will bring to the table, right? You know, we have the mechanism and the plans of how they want the team to play, right? You know, we're going to, you know, I'm confident this season that we're going to put in some performances that the crowd will be buzzing. Because, look, pre-season is always one of those situations, right, where you're throwing different players in, you're working on tactics and shapes. And, you know, it's a learning period. You know, we've put some youngsters in to see if, you know, if they can become men, right, in those periods. And that, listen, I'm backing him. Yes, we want to see goals, but I'd rather us score goals when the season starts.
Yeah, obviously, that's the most important.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Now, we're looking at some of the new signings, and Steve, you would have, I'll take it, seen a little bit more of Prattley than maybe some of us, because obviously you've got a bit of a foot in the camp at Charlton, haven't you?
Yes, as a local resident and as the husband of a season ticket holder there, I was subjected to quite a lot of Charlton matches being streamed into the house last season. And Darren Prattley was an excellent performer for Charlton at League One level. And a number of their supporters, when it was made clear that he was being released, were quite disappointed. Obviously, Kenny had him at Swansea, always helpful when you do know a player from a previous club. You know about his character and his background, as well as his actual playing performances. And very significant, therefore, that Kenny immediately made him captain. And I think already in these games, he's shown his leadership. The first game up at Dundee, when we were a bit short of bodies, he played in the back four, which he can do. But we shouldn't be short of centre-half, certainly when the other players like Beckles and Thompson come back. So he moved into midfield as the most, I would have said, the most defensive of the three midfield players, which raises a few questions perhaps about who's Cisse, but we may come to that later. So Prattley, yes, been excellent. And the other player he's seen a good bit of at Charlton was young Paul Smith, who I've really liked, and I think has impressed people. There was a lot of good vibes the two games I was at in the stadium, from people probably seeing him live for the first time. He's really energetic. For anybody who hasn't seen him, he's very quick, really energetic. Although he's really played more wide on the right than anything else, what I do like about him, unlike, say, Connor Wilkinson basically standing out on the touchline waiting for a pass, he's very keen to get involved in the game, he'll go looking for the ball, and best of all, he comes in and supports the centre forward, which I think a lot of people would agree we did lack a lot of the time last season, any support for Danny Johnson, as it was mainly, who was up front. So I think Paul Smith is going to be a big success, and I'm slightly more worried about the other strikers so far, but for instance, Harry Smith, we haven't seen anything of, so we can't judge him yet. I noticed Lee was talking today about possible rumours of another new signing. Has that progressed anywhere, Lee, or does that remain as a rumour? Anything coming up shortly, as far as we know?
At the moment, as far as I know, it's still a rumour, but like I was saying earlier, I think we will sign another striker. I think we'll get another striker, probably a more well-known name to come in. And because I can't see us starting with just them four strikers at the moment.
Even if we're going to play what is essentially, I mean, it has looked very much like a 4-3-3 more than a 4-4-2. I thought actually the Dundee game was the only time when we've looked as though it really was going to be a 4-4-2, because early on, when we weren't starting very well, and he did actually move Paul Smith right up the middle next to Aaron Drinnen, who's been starting at centre forward. But otherwise, I mean, Smith and one of the other players, either Rulsa Tiriu or the young lad in Krumah, have definitely been playing wide, and it's looked to me a bit more like a 4-3-3. So the one position I was expecting us to strengthen, and which did happen, was right back, and it sounds as though we've secured a very decent right back in Tom James. Again, we can't know it entirely how it's going to pan out, but excellent record, excellent pedigree, and people speaking very highly of him. So that was the one. If I was expecting one more signing, I would have thought someone to fill what is effectively that wide left position, because young Dan Krumah, who's done very well against some senior players of West Ham and Spurs, he's either a first or second year scholar. I think he's probably second year by now. But you wouldn't expect him to be starting in a league team. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone to fill that wider left role came in. But as you say, and as Kenny has hinted, I think we would expect at least one more signing before the big kickoff, as we call it, and it will be interesting to see. It's probably another forward of some description, as you say.
Can I just add to that? I think, you know, when you look at the signings of Prattley, that will sit and he will do that marshalling job. That's Kenny Jackett at his best, right? He knows what he needs to tidy things up, you know, in front of his defensive lineup. And what you will get, I mean, I've watched Paul Smith as a youngster, and what you get from him, you don't get a respite. If you've got him on a pitch, right, and you keep putting the balls in places, right, that he will go and find it, and he will make things happen. So what I'm urging everyone to do is to get behind those players, because I tell you what, you know, for me, that's my surprise package, really. I think Paul Smith is going to get us goals, definitely.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think he's going to be a very popular player, isn't he? Yeah. Because he is what you would call a crowd pleaser. And yeah, as I say, even from those two games at home, you could see how much. Because we all love a trier, don't we? And it was a criticism, perhaps a bit harshly, of some of the players towards the end of the last season, that they didn't seem to be giving 100%. I'm always very reluctant to make a criticism that strong. But I think you're absolutely right that everybody is going to like Paul Smith.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, one player who's joined with glowing references from some of his managers, previous managers, is Tom James, who's joined from Hibs.
Yes, as I said, very good pedigree. I mean, it was one of the managers who said they tried to sign him for West Bromwich Albion. And he ended up, you know, anyone who goes up to we may joke occasionally about the standard of football in Scotland, but anyone who goes up to a Scottish Premier League side, as Tom did and Danny Johnson has done, they've got something about them, haven't they? And he's about the right age. He's I think he's 25. He's 5'11", which I quite like. one of the problems I always felt that someone like Miles Judd had is that a fullback, you can very easily get, if you're not that tall, you can very easily get exposed to a ball to the far post, and if there are tall strikers, as there seem to be in most League Two teams, they can play on that and get the better of you. So, no, I mean, looks good, sounds good. They've obviously been patient in waiting to get him, haven't rushed into it too quickly. My general conclusion about those three games, if you put them together, was that the defence has actually looked very strong. I mean, a couple of aberrations up in Scotland when, if you remember, we conceded two goals right at the start, quite quickly at the start of the second half. But to have come through the West Ham and Spurs games with only one goal conceded, which was a very smartly taken goal by Spurs on Saturday, that lovely through ball by Lucas Moura, one of the internationals. I think the defence has looked very sound, and as I say, we still haven't had Omar Beckles, who's been away on international duty, and Adam Thompson to come back in, who will be very strong candidates for the second centre-half place, even though, I mean, a huge credit as well to someone we should mention, Shadrach Ogi, I thought has been excellent in those two games against that experienced opposition.
He's made it difficult, hasn't he, Steve? Well, I was thinking that on Saturday. He's making it difficult for Kenny to drop him, because he's come, I mean, he was at Aldershot, wasn't he, last season? He was at Aldershot. I think he spent time with Dover as well, didn't he? And he seems to have honed in on his game and taken on board, and regular football's helped him because he was being kept out a bit error, wasn't he, at the O's?
Yeah, and I want to just add something. I mean, listen, you can't get a better teacher than the manager, Kenny Jackie, because that's where he played, left back.
Yeah.
Right, so, you know, he will help that young man, right, because I didn't think he was properly treated, right? You know, he spent more than a year away, right? But you know, he's clearly come back a man. He went away a boy, and he's come back a man. And I think, you know, we're looking at that left-sided situation, but that might not be as big a problem as we think, really, because, you know, they will, you know, he can play left mid. You know, he's played there before. You know, he can play, you know, left-sided centre half. You know, I think on against Tottenham, he played the right side, but you know, he's an out and out left back who can go up and down the pitch if needs. And I think with Kenny and Joe, right, trust me, I think we were talking about the shape of how the team is setting out. I'm kind of agreeing with the 4-3-3 when we've got the ball. When we haven't got the ball, I think we might sort of drop into a 4-4-1-1 shape, right? Because, you know, he wants to make sure that we don't concede.
Well, this is what was lacking, Steve, last season, is that they couldn't adapt, could they?
Yeah.
They couldn't adapt during the game, and I think that's what Kenny is and Joe's got to work on, the ability for the team to switch shape and adapt to a situation very quickly.
Yeah. And I think they will. I think they will do that, and we're going to see that in the games. You're going to see how they set out. So how to set the stall out to start with, but when we haven't got the ball, that's when you're going to see how interesting and how different this Orient team will be this season.
Yeah, so the last two games, because it was an unchanged team really against Spurs, which showed how happy Kenny was with the West Ham game.
Yeah.
You had a midfield three of Pratley, who, as I think we agreed, was the more defensive, and then Hector more or less on the right and Dan Kemp on the left, which means that Cisse, who started the first game when Pratley was at the back, has not actually had a look in. I'm not even sure he's been on the pitch in those two friendlies. What do we think about Cisse and whether he's going to get in the team now if Pratley's going to play that role?
Well, I said recently that I think personally Cisse will be moved on before the transfer window closes, probably on loan. He's a big wage, he's one of the top earners, and for him not to be commanding a regular starting place on that wage is a waste of everyone's time. So personally, I think he's going to be moved on.
And I think you've kind of nailed it when you're saying, if we're going to play the three, right, if we're actually going to play the three, then, you know, those are the first three names: Hector on the right side, Kempe left, and Pratley definitely as a sitter, and he will screen, right? He will screen the back four. So that is a plan that I think that they will have, and that's what they will do. And then it's just about what our front three do.
Yes, and I that is going to be the key for me. And a slight worry, I mean, we have tried to be as positive as possible. A little negative for me has been, as say, the lack of chances. the fact that, for instance, Aaron Drinan has played all three games, he's had a good run in all three games, and has not really looked very much like scoring. There was one effort up at Dundee, a scrambled effort up at Dundee. I can see what he's, why he appeals. I mean, he should be decent in the air, and he's the man, certainly, who Lawrence Vigouroux looks for those clearances, rather like it was always Connor Wilkinson, who was really the only one who was ever going to win anything in the air when we got the ball from defence and the goalkeeper. You can see Lawrence Vigouroux and even Dan Happy sometimes with those diagonal balls he likes, looking for Drinan as the main man. But I suspect Harry Smith, once he gets fit, because as we know, he's been, as the manager told us, he's been self-isolating, I believe, and is even taller, clearly strong in the air, is going to be his biggest strength. And I think he will prove a very strong rival to Drinan. Be very, very interesting if we ever see both of them on the pitch at the same time. But they, for anyone who hasn't seen them, they seem to me to be like the what you might call the Matt Harrold figure. One of them probably as a sort of impact sub, at least. I mean, I agree with you that Paul Smith will get some goals because he's very good at nipping in behind and using that pace. I would just be slightly concerned about how many goals we're going to get from the others at this stage. Don't forget, last season, Danny Johnson 17 in the league, Connor Wilkinson 12. That's 29 goals we're looking to replace. Apart from Dan Kemp, nobody else got more than two or three. So we need more goals from everybody, especially in the midfield. And one other player perhaps we should mention, I mean, done very, very reasonably for me in an unfamiliar position, is Craig Clay at right back, which he had to play in the last two games. If you remember the first game Hector played there, which I think was a bit of a waste with Craig in midfield, and they switched round for these last two games. Craig Clay, very useful to have his experience there, and I like the way he was actually marshalling the defence, holding the line for the back four, using his experience. You could hear him above the small crowd, you could hear him encouraging Shadrach Ogie in particular, who was alongside him. So he's not done badly at all, but as I say, I don't think it was a surprise that we went and got an out-and-out right back in Tom James, which I suppose makes Craig a contender for one of those three midfield places, probably along with Hector.
I mean, I think you touched on character there. We were touching on Shadrach before, and I think, you know, as you say, with Hector as well, I think we're breeding good character people there, because certainly we're just touching back on Shadrach Ogie. He's had to step down. Now, a lot of people could have gone, and gone with an attitude to the lower clubs, if you like. He's knuckled down. He's learnt, and he's, you know, got in there, and he's come back a good-looking player here. I mean, I think we've got a bit of a gem. He might have left a rough diamond, but I think he's been polished up a bit.
Yeah, I know Lee has paid particular attention to his career, haven't you? And did you say you thought he would always end up as a central defender more than a full-back, Lee?
Well, I was just going to say, I think people got to remember that Shadrach only came into the club as a 16, 17-year-old. He was at Hornchurch, come through there, and he was a centre-half there, and obviously played against us in the Youth Cup game. So for him to take a step back, it's a step back from Orient. It's still a step up from where he was three years ago. Mm. So, like I said before, going to Aldershot, working under people like Danny Searle, he's going to learn absolute, or he did, learn absolute bundles there. And that will benefit him. Yes, he started off as a centre-half. I think he's one of them players who's gone through as a left-back, and he's learnt a lot. I do think, going forward, maybe not this season, but in seasons to come, he will end up back as a centre-half.
Right. And yes, I mean, another one of the good youngsters who we're bringing through, the board members in particular, as well as Director of Football and everybody else, acknowledge repeatedly how important it is to Orient to bring the players through from the academy. And some of them, I mean, it's three youngsters who came through from the academy, wasn't it? Papadopoulos and Young, who we've seen a little bit of already, and Byrne, the goalkeeper. Three of those have been given professional contracts. And when you see lads like Nkrumah and Tango both coming on against teams like West Ham and Spurs, it looks as though that production line is still producing well, which is very encouraging.
you're making us very optimistic, Steve. And you're not like a prophet of doom, but you're not known for your exuberance. So no, you're quite reserved normally.
I said 7 to 7.5 out of 10 so far. I'm not getting carried away. And if we're going to be realistic rather than just positive at this time of the season, I would say I'm slightly worried about how many goals we will get, because we were nothing like the biggest scorers in the league last season, even with people like Johnson and Wilko getting 29 between them. So we've got a lot to make up. They got 29 out of our 53. And historically, funnily enough, if you look back at it, we orient teams that have actually got promoted, it's nearly always been on the back of a strong defence rather than a strong attack. And I think that might well be the case this season as well. The problem with that is that when you go up to a new division, you're almost bound to score fewer goals, and so we've tended to struggle. If you look at the history, once we have got promoted, we've never had a particularly good season straight away. But that's a long way ahead. I'm, as I say, reasonably optimistic, satisfied. Lightly, I wouldn't be at all sorry to see another forward coming in, whether it's a wide player or another real centre forward. But I think it could do with being a goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, we could judge them a little bit better when they played teams like Maidenhead and Gillingham, isn't it? And a couple of games like that, I think we can sort of maybe be less concerned or more concerned after those.
Yes, be interesting to see whether we again put a very strong team out at Maidenhead or give some of the slightly younger players or the players who've been on the bench a bit of a run. I mean, as we're talking about Cisse, if he doesn't get on the pitch in this next game, he must be wondering rather likely what the future holds for him. But what you would like to see, I have to say, is a team knocking in 3 or 4 goals at Maidenhead. And in particular, I think someone like Drinnen is probably looking for a goal. Now we all know what strikers need and want, and you would like him to be finding the net somewhere pretty quickly, because they can lose a bit of confidence. I don't know what sort of lad he is, but he's never been a prolific goal scorer, and strikers can lose a bit of confidence if they don't hit that net from time to time, can't they? So I think that's one of the things we'll definitely be looking out for at Maidenhead.
Right, well, thanks very much for joining us, Steve, and have a lovely rest of the evening. We're going to have a little chat with Errol now, but thanks for being there and giving us your opinion.
Pleasure as ever.
Thanks, Steve. Bye, mate. Well, that was the dulcet tones of our own Steve Tung, and always speaks well, doesn't he? Always speaks well. Now then, we've got a man I'm very pleased to see. We've tried. How long have I been trying to get you back on this show, Errol?
You have been trying, and I apologise. Just been absolutely busy, but honour and a pleasure to be, you know, on the show this evening.
Yeah. You're not going to get out of it that easy. It's lovely to see you. And I mean,
I'm sitting next to my younger brother, just better looking.
I'll take that.
You'll take that, will you?
Yeah.
Right, Errol, and let's cast our minds onto you, shall we? Because I've known you a long, long time, and people know you. We were talking before we went on air. They know Errol as a bit of a cuddly character and a real smiler and a good laugh and a good giggle. But let's be honest here, it hasn't always been that way, has it, Errol? I mean, when you were younger, you were a bit of a naughty boy, weren't you?
There was a red button. You know, every remote has a red button, and I'm afraid to say I had a red button, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of problem with my headphones here. I can't hear a thing through them. It's wonderful, isn't it?
What are you trying to run away then?
Yeah.
Just talk amongst yourself while I change these headphones.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, you know, listen, when you're growing up, right, it's an interesting factor, because all I wanted to do was to be a professional footballer. And, but while trying to be a professional footballer, I also sort of, you know, behaved in a manner that wasn't suitable for someone of my age, and I used to be able to sort of take care of matters and situations that needed to be dealt with in a very unofficial way, if you like. People talk about the tools that they carry around. Well, mine were my fist, right? One was called Lloyd and one was called Winston, and
Who was the oldest?
Out of them two. Who was the oldest one?
Well, to put it this way, that's Winston.
That's the right.
Yeah, yeah. The left one is Lloyd, and Lloyd normally says hello, but Winston is good always night. The one that says goodnight.
Yeah. Love it.
So you got... You were on the door, weren't you, for a while, running
10
doors?
Years.
Or, I mean, because Lee has done a lot of that, haven't you?
Yeah.
So I'm the weed in amongst these
no,
two.
No, no. Well, Lee will tell you, back then when we used to do the doors, it was a lot pleasant to doing it now. Mm. I mean, I couldn't, and I'll say that probably say for Lee as well, we could not do the same job now that we were doing 20 years ago because... Mm. It wasn't, you know, I mean, back in the days, if you had a problem with somebody, you just took him around the corner and you dealt with it. And you tidied
said,
it up.
When they woke up, they said, sorry.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they just shoot you.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole situation has become different now. You know, people are a lot braver. And, you know, you as a door person, well, you know, they don't give it a doorman anymore now. You've got this highly sophisticated name that they give you. You know, you're a person who is, his role is to restrict people from behaving badly. You know, now, I don't know anyone from the old school that would work because, you know, when you're telling somebody, right, from the old school to restrict somebody, that word for them is a joke because their way of restricting somebody is to take him round the corner and
lights out.
Yeah, and put him to sleep.
Yeah,
literally.
Going back to you as a youngster, I mean, would you say your parents were quite strict and firm with you?
Oh yeah, yeah, very, very, very. And do you know what? At the time growing up, I couldn't see it, but I'm glad that they were the way that they were. You know, because you know my parents were sort of God-fearing people, and you know, the worst thing you can do is to behave that badly and kind of behave in a manner that you were bringing the police to their front door because that wasn't acceptable. You know, their way of life was that you worked hard, you know, and you know, you behaved yourself in companies because when you went out the front door, you represented the family.
Mm.
So when you misbehaved, as we call it, or not sort of show any manners and respect when you're out on the street, that came back to them. They took that very hard.
Yeah. So as a youth, you're in at Brentford as a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And you're playing with people like Luther Blissett, etc. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get told you're not wanted. Now, how was that?
I mean, that was tough.
You've seen a lot of players get told that over the years, being a coach for 40 years now.
Yeah.
You've had that firsthand. Now, how crushing was that?
Back then, you know, I was an 18-year-old lad who all I wanted to do was play football, you know, and I realised at an early age that I wasn't good enough to play on the pitch. So they put me in goal. And for some reason, you know, either I looked good or I just was lucky to be able to save the balls that I saved. And, you know, people started saying, you know, you're not bad in goal. You're quite decent. You dive at things and, you know, when you come off the line, you're quite intimidating. But that was... To be honest, really, that's what I was like. You know, if I come off my line, you know, my attitude was to take everything that was in front of me. So I suppose the word intimidating was what I was. But when I went to Brentford, it was interesting because playing football, you know, for my school and for my district, I had great players like Luther Blissett, Cyril Regis, Ricky Hill, Gary Waddock. You know, I played with all of those players in front of me and, you know, I thought, well, I must be really, really good because I very rarely conceded a goal.
Hmm.
But when I went to Brentford for 2 years, I think I learned a lot more about how bad I was as opposed to how good I was. And, you know, and at the time I couldn't see it and I couldn't understand it. You know, when they released me, I was in tears because they took away my world, really. And then the reality kicked in, right, when my dad said, look, son, this football thing's not working. You're going to have to get a job. So he went and he got me a job with his mate who had a garage. And for the first 2 years, right, all I'd done was clean tools. Now, when you've got a dream of being a footballer, that, you know, that's not what you want to be doing.
Huh.
So I kind of went off the rails a little bit in that two-year period. to coin a phrase. And, you know, I was getting myself involved in things that wasn't respected and wasn't healthy for my family, you know. And, you know, and I always tell people that the last hiding, the last proper hiding that I got, I was 18 years of age when I got that. You know, my dad kind of, my dad was a big, assuming man, right? He was 6'6" and he was as wide as the door frame that you see on a house, and he took no prisoners. So, you know, back then, when you got told off by your parents, you properly got told off. It weren't like now, right, where you've got to get professional advice. The professional advice you got was coming from your parents, you know. But it was all part of the growing up. For me, it made me become a man, because I started to learn and understand, you know, because when I was working as a trainee mechanic, one of the things that my boss always said to me, he said, listen, if you can't respect the tools that you're going to use on a job, then you're not going to respect the job that you're going to do. And I took those words with me in my journey, and I started to do some football coaching. I was still playing, but I started to do some coaching, and kind of found that I was looking at other coaches, taking bits and pieces from them and adding my own bits and pieces. But I was very fortunate, because in that journey, I was working with some really, really fantastic youngsters. You know, I mean, I worked with David Beckham as a kid, right, for nearly 5 years, you know. And I mean, when you've got somebody that's, you know, as gifted as he wasn't potentially the best player in the team, but what he was the hardest working. And, you know, what I always say to youngsters from that point of view is, if you work as hard as you can and give 100%, and try to give a little bit more, you're just as equal, if not better, than the person who just turns up and has all the skill, but not the ambition to go and push themselves on. And, you know, and that was a good learning curve for me.
Did you find it was a vehicle for you to get rid of that frustration of not being a footballer now?
Yeah.
But also you've got that knowledge that what failure's like, and you can prepare players, if you like, for failure as well as success.
Well, I think what has helped me in my football journey, if you like, right, is what I learnt from my failure. You know, because what I've seen in football is that when a youngster is released, generally that's it. You know, sometimes through almost no fault of their own, football clubs, you know, they have a group of boys who are all chasing for those scholarship spaces. Sometimes only one, maybe two get it. You know, but you've still got another 16 to 18 kids that you got to pick the pieces up with, you know. And so it started to become part of my family, really. You know, not only did I kind of water and feed them, I gave them the best advice that I could. I sat down with them and spoke about the things that affected them outside of football as well as with football. And then realised that I wasn't just a football coach, I was a football mentor, really, because, you know, when you're taking kids from inner city places and you're putting them in an environment, right, which, listen, one, two games could change their whole life, you know. And when you look at that, you realise the importance that you have. You know, it's not about money, because I never did it for money. But what it was satisfaction in looking and helping somebody to become a man and then a football person. You know, and that was what was important to me, because I wanted them to understand that, look, you have to deal with failure the same way you deal with success, right? And you have to learn from both of them. If you keep, you know, I was playing in teams that were winning games. So the word failure wasn't really something I identified. I had to learn it the hard way. And so when I see other youngsters going through it, what I try to do is educate them through the journey and through the pathway. And it's not just about football, it's about life skills.
Yeah, I mean, you've got that personality that you need, I think, to get messages over to people. You're a larger-than-life character, and you're an extremely popular person with nearly everybody you meet. I mean, obviously, there must be one or two, I suppose, like anybody that, you know, that can't stand you. I mean, I've got a mini fan club that hate me, but you know, you can't like everybody, and everybody can't like you, but on the whole, Errol, you know, you're one of them people that actually I've never heard anybody say anything bad about. And your character is big, but that was brought to a grinding halt, wasn't it? Your whole life was brought to a grinding halt with a cancer diagnosis. Yeah. And I mean, you disappeared off the scene, and I didn't see you for a few months. And then, you know, this rather slimmer Errol turns up and tells me very quietly, I'm been treated for cancer. And you could have knocked me over with a feather when you said that. And take us through it, because it's something that so many people unfortunately will be told during their lifetime. And you obviously, something was wrong.
Let me tell you the story. You know, for all of my life, right, I never feared anything, you know. So my first baptism of what I call failure was not making it as a footballer. But that was something that I learned through the period of my life to be able to deal with it, right? But, you know, when I it was interesting because in 2009, I lost my mum, which was my rock, my strength, my go-to person. There was never a situation that I think my mum couldn't give me an answer for, right? So, you know, but one of the things she said to me before she died, you know, she held my hands tightly. She said, son, I'm not worried about dying because I'm leaving you with good people. And I struggled with that statement because I said to my wife, I said, what on earth does she mean by that? You know, because, you know, I mean, for me, I don't see a negative in people, right? Because if there's a negative in them, they weren't born with it, right? And then the year after, and 2010 that was, you know, my wife, bless her, she forever was complaining about my snoring then. And I said, look, if it bothers you that much, right, you make the appointment with the doctor and I'll go. She made the appointment, went to the doctor, sat in the reception room, picked up a leaflet, read the leaflet, and I thought, you know what? I need to go and make an appointment to come back and do this then. Because, you know, it was interesting because the leaflet was telling me the stats about prostate cancer, 1 in 12 Asian men, 1 in 8 European men, 1 in 4 Afro-Caribbean men. And I thought, oh, okay, well, it's triggered something here, right? So let me go and make an appointment to come back and do it. Because on the paper it said, your PSA test is a simple blood test. So when I went to the reception and I said to the young lady, I said, look, I want to make an appointment to come back and do this test. She said, Mr. McKellar, it's a simple blood test. You don't need to make an appointment. We can do this now. It takes less than 10 minutes. Little did I think at the time, guys, that was going to change my life. So done that. A week after that first blood test, I get a phone call from the doctor. Could I come in and do another blood test? I said, anything to worry about, doc? He said, no, it's, you know, routine stuff. Anyway, done the second blood test. A week after the second blood test, they phoned me up and they say, look, we've got an appointment for you to come in and have a biopsy. I said, yeah, okay, when do you want to do that then? And they said, well, we want to do it today. I said, okay. So I put the phone down, and immediately I phoned my missus and I said, I've just had a phone call from the doctor. They want to do a biopsy on me. And she said, when they want to do that? And I said, they actually want to do it today. So she said, well, don't worry, it's nothing to worry about. She said, get a cab and I'll meet you at the hospital. And as a typical man, before I put down the phone, I said, by the way, babe, what is a biopsy? She said, don't worry, it's nothing to worry about. And I'm glad she said that because I can tell you now, right, what women go through, right, we men scream at the mind, the smallest of things, right? But for me, I felt like I was giving birth. And I don't even know what that feels like, you know? But to move the story on, a week after that biopsy, they called me in, they did a scan. And then 4 days after that scan, they called me and my wife in, sat us down and said, Mr. McKellar, we have to tell you, your prostate is covered in cancer. Well, I got up and I walked out of the room because what are you talking about? That just, it went right over my head. Went outside the building, sat in my car. And, you know, as I said to you about fear, you know, it comes in stages. And I don't know whether I was scared, frightened, or both, right? But I just burst into tears. When I sat in that vehicle, I just burst into tears. And I think I felt helpless. I didn't know what to do. I thought, well, you know, this is it. And I was proper frightened. And, you know, that feeling, I only had that when I lost my mum. And my wife came, and she sat in the car, and she said, listen, she said, all the years I've been with you, I've never seen you quit on anything you've ever done. So, and I've had to stop crying, and I have to man up now. And I think, is she having a go at me? Or is this her way of motivating me? So I took the latter, that she's motivating me. So went back in there. Right, we sat down with the doctor. I said, doctor, what do I need to do to deal with this problem? And he looked at me and he said, Mr. McKellar, if we don't remove your prostate, you could be dead in 6 months. And that was the harsh reality of the conversation. So I said, well, okay, let's do it. And he said, look, there'll be some issues that you'll have to deal with, and there will be some side effects you're going to have to come to terms with. And I said, look, if I've got a chance of staying alive, I'll take that. So I had the operation. There were still some complications, so I had to have nearly 3 months of radiotherapy. And I kept thinking, you know what? I started to talk about what God has been doing for me and the fact that I'm still alive because of him. And, you know, and I turned to my missus and I said, you know what? I've got to find a way of doing something about this. And she said, listen, this cancer has only knocked you down. It ain't knocked you out. And what you're going to do, you'll go 12 rounds in it, but knowing you, you'll take everybody with you. So that was my inspiration to go on. And then, as you know...
She's a full shot, missus, isn't she?
Mate, I'm telling you, right? I mean, there's a few people I won't go 12 rounds with.
She's a good woman. She's a good woman.
And then on top of that, so being out of work for 6 months, right, I went back to work, and as you know, all of you know, I used to run a garage fixing cars, servicing an MOT. So first day, a guy walked in at the garage, we got chit-chatting, and real pleasant. And to this day, guys, I don't know why I said what I said to him. I said, listen, I said, when was the last time you had your prostate checked, mate? So the conversation stopped. It's not pleasant anymore, and he's giving me this hard look, right? And he said, what the bleep, bleep, bleep has that got to do with my gearbox not working? Right? So I looked at him and I said, listen, I tell you what, I'll give you 20% discount on the work I'm going to do on your vehicle if you go and get your prostate checked. Well, clearly, I didn't think it out properly, right? Because he turned up 2 weeks later and he said, I took your advice. And he was waving this bit of paper in his hand. And I looked at him and I thought, Christ, this has just cost me 200 quid. And he must have seen the look because he said to me, don't worry about the money. He said, but you better read this bit of paper. And guys, when I opened that letter, right, he had 25% cancer in his prostate. He was the first man that walked into my garage that was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So I think something's turned us, something's changed us, you know. And to have 48 men walking into that garage meant that I had a responsibility.
But it's not 48, is it, Errol? It's so many more than that.
They've just given me, or they haven't given it to me yet. They've given me an MBE for saving nearly a million lives.
Yeah.
I said, listen, that goes on in TV stuff. You see that in movies. I said, me and others have saved a million lives. And you've been in a conversation with me this time.
Listen,
right? Lee as well.
But you have, because people, it's not just the lives you've saved, it's the lives you've affected. And there's so many people who haven't lost a brother or lost their dad, or, you know, who will have kids, who didn't have kids, who, you know, and so on and so on and so on and so on, and grandparents, etc. So it's countless people in so many families. And I mean, it's a wonderful story. I mean, it's not a story, really.
No,
it's a fact. It's a wonderful fact.
It's a fact story,
and
yeah.
You know, if it had happened to anybody else, Errol, we wouldn't be where we are.
No.
And I think it's your strength of character and you as a person.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was meant to be, I don't know. I mean, that's a matter of opinion. But because it was you, and because of your personality, you know, you're out there spreading the gospel of this.
Yeah.
And now I know you want to get the mobile testing up and running, and so many football clubs are getting involved, Luton very much involved as well.
Oh, yeah.
And get this van up outside the football grounds to get people tested, which has got to be a winning idea. And I mean, really, you know, it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah.
And,
but I just want to add something, right, to what we were talking about here is, you know, when you're ill, right, as a man, when you're ill, you can't cope with the word cancer on your own, right? It takes your partner, your family, you know, your immediates, right? But I want to say, you know, the football fraternity and particularly the Orient supporters, right, they were like my family. They were the extension of my family. And do you know what? And that's why I challenge anybody right, to tell me something negative about those supporters. You know, listen, we've been through some of the hardest times, guys, right? But, you know, the word family and the word community cannot be represented any higher than our football club, you know, because that's the strength that I had to use to help me to get through what I got through.
Well, I mean, as I say, I know you're not at the moment involved at the football club at the moment, but if they've, I'm not going to say it on air, I don't really care anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolute error on their behalf, and the club should get you back in, because currently we've got to go about 2 or 3 minutes to talk on this, but obviously we've seen somebody get banned on the racist issue at the club, and we were talking, I mean, we talked privately, and we said, of all the people that should be at the forefront of the club's work, and people who can act as a mentor, who can educate people, bring people in who've got a problem like that, and I'll call it a problem like that, where there's somebody, and you know, you're black and I've got a problem with you, you know, and you say, right, sit down with me, let's have a chat. No one's gonna, no one's gonna thump anybody. Let's sit down here and let's have a chat about why. Why you feel that way? Why do you feel that way about me? You don't know me, but why do you feel that way?
And I can bring that to the table.
And this is a wasted opportunity, because rather than beating a problem with a big stick and saying, you know, I'm not going to say they're wrong about the life ban because I didn't see the content of the tweet. Now, we've seen some tweets, but I can't say for certain that was the right tweet. So we can't say the club's acted wrongly. They've done what's right for the club, definitely. Whether that's right for the individual to be cast aside for the rest of his life or not is another matter. I mean, some supporters feel that that's right. Other people think, well, hang on, that's a bit strong. You could have you could have banned him for a while and then brought him in on an education course and blah, blah, blah. We don't know the ins and outs, so we're not going to say they're wrong. But you've got something to offer, I think, into the community, and Orient could use you to, as a base, if you like, to bring the people in who are, if you are, offending in that way, and, you know, literally make a friendship thing with people, and people could come out of it totally different.
And you know what we all have to remind ourselves with, right? Leyton Orient Football Club is not a racist football club, but when you wear a piece of garment that represents a football club, you represent that club. So, you know, we've spoken at length about this man being banned, right, because he's a Leyton Orient supporter. But what should be happening is someone's got to sit down with him and say, why? You know, why did you feel you needed to come out with that kind of statement? You know, what is it that you're angry with me then? Yeah, why you feel that, you know? Someone's got to talk to him, because just by banning him doesn't actually solve the problem.
No, it's a brush under the carpet job, isn't it?
I think, following on from what you're just saying, Errol, it's like we've always been a family club. We've always been a community club. The way it's going there, their business, they're trying to bring more fans in. I get all that. But they need to understand they're coming into this special club that isn't racist. And having someone like yourself who's leading the way for the fans and for the club, it will only benefit the club. It will push us forward as a massive family community club.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, the clock's beaten us. It's been great, Errol, and I'd love to get you back. And you've got this walk going on the weekend, haven't you, with Gordon Greenwich, Walk and Talk for Prostate Cancer. Just quickly, 20 seconds, tell us what you need to tell us.
Right, please, ladies and gentlemen, Sunday 25th of July at Gladstone Park, Neasden, NW2, 6JA. Please come out and walk and talk prostate cancer. You know, health issues is something we men don't talk about. We want all the family to come out, walk and talk with us. You know, and listen, a problem shared is a problem halved.
Right, we're out of time, and Leyton Orient, get this man back in the building. All right, everybody, you take care, and we'll see you all next week with another edition of the Orient Hour. Night, night.
Ain't up to pump, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane, that's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause there's flats in every corner of the ground, you can get your kids in just £5, get an Orienteer. It's only a quid. This ain't up to par. It's Brisbane Road. It ain't White Hart Lane.
That's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna wear rock and roll out of the world again. We had an invite up 78. We had John Sear, that is most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Chris Tate's hair. Feels good. Remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I wanna wear rocking all over the world again. This is St. Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's the wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.